next, it's Rob Whelan, who will be well known to many people. So Rob has guided Australia's insurance industry through some of the most challenging issues of the past decade, including the 2010-11 season of natural disasters, the Natural Disaster Insurance Review. So session two, we'll talk more about those kind of areas, the Northern Australia Insurance Premiums Task Force, the financial system inquiries, and five changes in Prime Minister. So it sounds pretty calm and relaxed at the ICA. So Rob joined the ICA. It'll be 8 years on Thursday, so March the 22nd, 2010, after a successful career and a diverse range of roles within the insurance, banking and healthcare sectors. And I heard the other day that I think you've made it to be one of the major influencing CEOs in Australia currently. So, a flavour of the month. So, Rob, you'd like to come up and do your slides? Thanks.
Well, good morning, everybody. I just hope that I can give you a bit of a perspective of how the industry is responding to these sorts of challenges. And it's a theme that we've developed over the years, I guess, particularly since, Cyclone Marcia, actually. As the world of data has become increasingly more influential in how we go about pricing for these sorts of perils. The industry has moved quite rapidly now to a risk-based pricing model. And I think whilst that's a fairly controversial issue for some politicians and so on, because of the affordability issue and so on, it has had a pretty profound effect on the thinking of how we go about coping with these sorts of perils. It's pretty extensive now. It's a fairly blunt signal, but it is a very direct signal, which profiles to the individual in no uncertain terms what we believe their risk to be. And that's become, as you've heard this morning, increasingly accurate as we get better and better methodologies for assessing that particular peril for that particular address and the interaction of different perils as they occur simultaneously in many cases. The water ingress is a classic case where we've seen quite a lot of properties that are cyclone properties developed for cyclone damage, so they protect life, but they allow a huge amount of water in, and we've seen some of these cyclones, such as Debbie, with massive amounts of water. In fact, Debbie was more a flood event than it was actually a wind event. So that's a challenge for us to be able to get that message across to people, and probably the area that we have most challenge in that area is strata insurance, because strata buildings are prolific in those sorts of cyclone risk areas, and they are the ones which, whilst robust in terms of being able to resist the wind, they're not particularly robust in being able to resist the water ingress, and that's where most of the damage actually occurs. So it's a kind of educational process that we have to go through to be able to deliver to people in the community why the industry actually prices the way we do. And uncomfortable as it is, we are actually starting to see some responses from government and from community to say, well, maybe you have a point here and maybe we need to do something about it. So what is the role of the industry here? Well, essentially, our role is at the end of the risk chain. So we're there to pick up the residual risk that occurs in a given peril area. And there's a lot of misconception that somehow that we are the ones that pick up the entire risk. Well, that's just not possible, as you will realise. So what we look for is, what are the factors that have actually gone to contributing to the risk, and what are the factors that actually have contributed to reducing the risk, and therefore we are able to calculate what the residual risk is for us to be able to bring in insurance protection. Now, government has found that a bit difficult to understand at times. They think we should be able to cover everything and cover them fully. But that's not how risk transfer works. And the industry has moved, as we've discussed this morning, away from massive cross-subsidisation to individual peril address level pricing. Now, that's a really significant shift, and I've had conversations with, just as recently as last night, with some regulators who find that quite difficult to grasp, that this has a fundamental movement and that that's not going to go back, that we're actually moving in that direction and that direction quickly and more in a more sophisticated way. But in some respects, they find that threatening and often talk to me about community rating and why we should be more like the health industry. And then I point out to them the cost of the health insurance world and the amount of subsidies that they have to have just to be able to keep their price increases to 6% or so every year. So that argument doesn't really hold water. So I want to give you some examples. You've probably seen some of these before. This is Lismore. And Lismore was really badly affected during Cyclone Debbie. It was a flood event for Lismore. But this was a classic case, really, because Lismore has a levee. So it does have protection. The levee, however, was already noted as being inadequate for the potential risks that Lismore faces from flooding. However, the council, some years before, I think it was in 2013, had a proposition to increase the height of the levee, and they refused to do it. The community said, no, we don't want to live behind a wall. It's aesthetically unappealing. We don't want it, so leave it as it is. And then they got this. So we're still dealing with claims out of Lismore because the number of people who had either no flood insurance or inadequate flood insurance, particularly in the business district. Now, it was expensive, there is no doubt about it, but it's even more expensive for them now because they don't have their businesses anymore. And, of course, the industry is put in the front line of that to say, why is that the case? And we do point out the inadequacy of the mitigation and why that should have been dealt with. Launceston, as a contrast of two cities, actually did increase the size of its levee, knowing that it had a similar level of flood risk, and it had a similar level of flooding come its way in about the same time, and it was almost entirely protected. And the business district now flourishes, whereas in Lismore they struggle. So what price mitigation? What price aesthetic appeal? In this case, you can see the differences in the pricing. So someone who has a home, say $350,000, sum insured, will pay something in the order of $3,000 per annum. Nearly $4,000 per annum. Someone who's not in that area is $1,000. So there is significant differences in being able to mitigate the flood risk, and that's the price signal that we continue to send. Similarly, if you look at bushfire, this was a wooden home, nicely nestled in amongst the trees, regrettably completely destroyed by bushfire again because the exposure to that hazard was not fully comprehended. Now, this was quite some time ago, but it's if you look at what happened with Black Saturday in Victoria, there were a lot of this sort of situations occurring where people were building in pretty places, appealing places, but totally dangerous places and not adequately building to withstand the risk. So we continue to try and educate and show people how they can actually address the risk and reduce the cost of their insurance if they work towards an appropriate structured mitigation program. And perhaps this is one of the best ones that we have. This is Roma in Queensland. Now, Roma was a particularly flood-prone area. A colleague from RACQ will recognise Roma. Roma flooded, I think it was numerous times over a three-year period, and it got to a point where, in fact, some of the larger insurers said that they would not take any new business. They would deal with renewals, but they wouldn't take any new business. So they put a line in the sand, if you like, and said, no, we make too much losses. And I think there was $124 million in losses in that one town over a three-year period because of continuous flooding. And the council continued to build on the floodplain. So it continued to put in developments on the floodplain, despite having full knowledge that this was a dangerous thing to do. As I said, one of the major insurers said, no more, we're not going to do it. And that caused them to stop and think. And as a consequence, over some time, they decided that they needed to deal with this issue. So the red dots, as a colleague showed before, is the flood risk in Roma. As I said, $124 million of claims over 3 years because many, many, many homes in that town were subject to significant flood risk. They built a levee, finally, and those red dots turned to green. And it's an earth levee, but it's quite effective. And as a consequence of that, we saw significant reductions in the business was continued to be written at that point. So it cost them $15 million. It protected some 483 homes and businesses, and the average premium decrease was something like 34%, but the maximum was about 74%, 75%. Significant, really significant. So it was a demonstration that well thought through targeted mitigation, which is an investment in the community at the end of the day, actually pays dividends very quickly. And in the case of Roma, which was a very flood-prone town, that $15 million investment has paid for itself several times over and will continue to do so into the future. So it does continue to raise risk-based pricing, always raises the issue about affordability because they are, in many cases, properties which almost no matter what you do, are beyond your capability to mitigate the risk. And to price it, you will see a price signal, if applied technically, will be extremely expensive. Now, we're often challenged with that at the extreme end. So what are we going to do about it? But is it really a question for insurers to say, what are we going to do about it, as opposed to what is the community going to do about it? What is the government going to do about it? Who are the ones in the first instance that allowed these buildings to be built in the places that they have been? And in many instances, there is no real fault on behalf of the property owner. They are quite often quite ignorant of how bad the risk can be. And so we have to be able to turn the discussion back to being able to get people to recognise that the only way you can sustainably deal with these things is to reduce the risk. And if that means you have to move, then you have to move. And that, I know, is unpalatable to many, but it has happened. Grantham in Queensland is a classic case in point. where that properties in Grantham had to be moved because it was actually in the way of an inland tsunami, and many people died. So not only do you get property damage, you get people dying. So we point that out to government as well. So it might be inconvenient, might be economically costly, but it's also costing in lives. So what are the solutions? Well, the things that drive the costs are many and varied, but some of it is obviously the frequency of claims. On average, Queensland claims 5 times more than anywhere else. In fact, they tend to have excesses way lower by choice than any other state in Australia. Reason being, their frequency of claims is much higher. So they choose to keep their excesses low because they claim a lot, which is understandable, human behaviour. Appropriate building standards, which we've already pretty much covered, but it is pretty much the case, as we've shown, that Queensland in particular has the vast majority of pre-82 properties, which are highly prone to damage. And one that's not fully understood is the supply costs. Many of the time, we're dealing with rebuilding Queensland, which we tend to do every 3 years, in very remote areas, which are very difficult to reach and very difficult to bring supplies in. Some of the resort islands is a classic case in point. And that raises costs enormously. So this gives you a bit of an indication of the cost curve of being able to rebuild. And the if you draw a line across the centre there, that's where the costs go up, which isn't surprising. And that's where we have to do most of the rebuilding and repair work. So costs are significant in those areas. And how bad is the affordability issue? We get a lot of anecdotal evidence, and many of the regulators that investigate this, and there's a plethora, as was mentioned in the introduction, of government investigations, all of which come to the same conclusion. But they continue to do them. We've got another one now, which is a 3-year ACCC inquiry into Northern Australia, finding out exactly the same things, mostly anecdotal, and we put the facts. This gives you an idea of what the actual policy in force costs are in these regions. So Queensland's roughly about twice at the extreme level, on average. And the tail is long, admittedly, but it is nowhere near as bad as a lot of the anecdotal evidence would suggest. Nowhere near. So we hear about people with $10,000 premiums. No, not really. But they may have been told that that's what it will cost them, but at the end of the day, that's not what it actually cost them. And we get a lot of anecdotal stuff around strata as well. There are some issues with strata, because I do think we increased price very rapidly there after Cyclone Yasi. But at the end of the day, it is technically correct. So if you look at the real picture and show the real picture and then get people to understand the key drivers behind the pricing and why it is as it is, it makes entire sense. So it's logical and it's robust. So what's the solutions? Well, the one we get thrown at all the time is just throw money at it. You know, just cross-subsidise or whatever. And that's the easy way. That's the way we used to do it before. There's very little appetite to do that anymore. The problem with that, which no one seems to be able to help me with, is that when you do that, what happens to the risk? Nothing. It stays exactly the same, or gets worse because you actually encourage more building. And so people continue to stay there. So how do you get around this sort of stuff? You've got to actually have a sustainable solution which actually incentivises proper, structured mitigation programs. And that's what we're doing. And that's all the work that we are pursuing now, because just throwing money at it actually never stops if you look at all the programs around the world, I mean all of them, they all become more and more and more expensive. The cross-subsidisation grows and grows and grows, and the risk doesn't change. So that is not sustainable, does not address the core problem. And that's why we bring people back, government, regulators, etc., to say the core problem is what needs to be addressed, not the event itself. It's the core problem. So, just a quick profile of two cyclones, if you like. Yasi and Debbie. Debbie was an unusual one. It was very much a water-based one. Cyclone Yasi was very much a wind-based one. But if you look at the differences between those two cyclone events, you can get a bit of an indication of how the industry has moved, because the industry has responsibilities too to improve its act, to make itself better at being able to respond to these events. Classic one was to bring in flood cover, which we did, which is one of the contributors to the price increase. Because if you're going to cover that peril in places like Queensland, you're going to have to charge for it. Otherwise, you're going to go broke. So that was a major development, and that happened in between Yasi and Debbie, if you like. And our ability to close off claims quickly, because we deploy quickly, we're ahead of the game now, is contrasted by how quickly, in 12-month period, we've been able to close off something like 96% of claims in Debbie, which is pretty phenomenal given the breadth of that particular cyclone event, which was huge. So the industry has responded. So it's not like we're sitting on our laurels and telling other people what to do. We actually do make significant change to how we operate in the field, as well as encouraging governments in a partnership to work with us to reduce the risk. And that's our primary objective in managing these disasters. Thank you.